This episode of the Agile Uprising podcast is brought to you by Lean TV. Lean TV for the Apple TV allows anyone to run and participate in Lean Coffee style meetings. This is great for business, brainstorming, family planning, or anything else. Lean TV takes care of the notes, voting, prioritizing, timekeeping, and advancing, all without the need for a meeting facilitator, boards, sticky notes, etc. Hundreds of notes can be written and discarded in an instant, along with the Apple TV app. There are free companion apps on iOS and Android. No internet connection needed. Visit leantv.io for more info.
This is the Agile Uprising Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Agile Uprising Podcast. Today we are talking about the Agile recruiting efforts. Before we get started, I want to point everyone to a new topic over at the Agile Uprising Coalition, where our members can submit a question that we will handle on a future podcast. We're starting to get some coming in, so if you have a question that you would like to have us answer, feel free to contribute. I also want to steer people towards our Agile Manifesto project that we've been working on. We are in the sweet middle spot. I think we've spoken to about 9 of the original 17 authors. Those recordings are available on agileuprising.com. And as always, give us a follow at Agile Uprising on Twitter. So today, we are doing the Agile Recruiting Show. I'm your host, Ryan Lockard. And with me today, I'm very lucky to be joined by 4 different guests. We have Jim. I'm going to kill your last name. Is it Djalal?
Almost, man. It's Djalal. There's no D. That's how you pronounce it.
All right. We got Jem. Obviously, he's coming in from London, if you didn't pick that up already. And he's known as the Agile Recruiter. Jem's a transformation coach, a scrum trainer. Coincidentally enough, we both worked at the same company at the same time for a small period. Gotten that out today. Jem, you want to say hey?
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. We also have Steve Smith and Rory Seabrook from the Arrows Group, also based in London. The Arrows Group focuses mostly on digital enterprise and mobile. They have a really cool effort that hopefully we get into today, talking about Caracon. And I was lucky enough to meet Steve when I was over in London recently doing a talk for Agile London. So welcome aboard, boys.
Hey, man.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on. And then last but not least, we have Scott Keller. If I have three guys on from London, I got to have at least 2 guys from Philly. So,
right.
Scott is the Director of Strategic Solutions for Yo. It's a Philadelphia-based staffing company with at least national, if not global, presence. The core focus is on staffing and providing solutions for Agile projects. So, Scott, thanks for joining us today, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, guys. So first and foremost, why Agile recruiting? You guys are all living in this space every day. What draws you towards Agile recruiting as opposed to traditional staffing contracts or staffing engagements? What's the ploy for Agile?
Well, this is Scott. For me, it's really the fact that any good developer wants to work in an Agile shop, and it is kind of a necessity to move into this space, because that's where the best developers want to be working, in an Agile shop. So it was just our customers are going in that direction, and we decided 5-6 years ago that we needed to get on board.
Yeah. And Steve, what about you? Or you and Rory? What has you guys so engrossed into the Agile culture and the Agile market?
It's just exciting. It's fun. It's quite fast paced. You get to work with some of like people who want to innovate, and similar to Scott, sort of 5 or 6 years ago, we had to be relevant. We in the digital space, we had to get out into that market too.
Yeah. So Jim, you come at this from a little bit of a different angle. You were a practitioner, right?
Yeah.
To help people understand your unique perspective in the agile recruiting space, can you just kind of give that that intro?
Yeah, sure. So for the last, I'd say over a decade now, I started as a scrum master for the first 5 years of my career, and then now I've been agile coaching for the other half decade. And really, it's pretty well known in a lot of agile communities in the UK and London that there is a stereotype of recruiters that they put out agile roles and they don't quite understand these roles. And the impact of that is that these roles are filled by practitioners who then go on to try and do roles which aren't necessarily meant to be together, in inverted commas, I'm not trying to be religious. But the impact of that is these roles do not work as they were intended to. And so my perspective was at first frustration, but then it turned into a bit of an olive branch, if you like. And so for the last sort of 10, 11 months, we've been teaching Agile to recruiters with the aim, and we've created some impact to allow recruiters to feel confident and have the knowledge so when they speak to clients, to be able to actually explore the needs of the client. So instead of, you know, taking on the Scrum Master Product Owner role or a Scrum Master lead role, truly understand what's needed. And through that, the belief is that recruiters won't advertise such anti-pattern roles as they're known. So yeah, we're trying to help, I guess.
So then is it fair to say that your path to the agile recruiting world is just to fill the gap of educating the recruiting market as to what these agile roles are and what, you know, what they are and what they aren't, because there is a huge influx of job recs that I've seen, or even people that have approached me for basically a project manager when they label as an agile coach, right?
Right.
Okay.
I guess for me, we're talking about motivation. I did one of these anti-pattern roles before. So I've been a product owner scrum master before. And so I've experienced how that conflict of interest hasn't allowed me to get the best out of my role, the individuals around me, and as well as the customer being impacted. So my intrinsic motivation has, you know, wanted me to offer time and help and to be a little bit more empathetic than I would have been in the past. So I guess, sounding a bit philosophical here, but it seemed like a negative experience when I did the role, but it allowed me to recognize that I can give something back. You know, we've not monetized this. We're trying to create more of a community rather than a certification process, because we don't believe the way that you create a mindset with anybody, teams, organizations, recruiters, is by just selling certificates. There needs to be ongoing support and coaching. And a two-day workshop may be beneficial, but it's not the lasting answer.
Mm-hmm. So that being said, I mean, each of you guys have similar areas of interest here, but what is the market like? I mean, Jim, for you training the recruiters, and for Scott and for Steve and for Rory, you guys are mentioning the need for the agile capabilities and capacities to stay relevant. Is the market on the upswing? Has it already crested? Do you think it's at the bottom and still growing? Where do you guys feel the agile market is in the world of business? Yeah, Scott, you want to go first?
Sure. I think the market is very strong in the United States. I wouldn't say it's you know, crested. I would think that it's still on the upswing in you know, some areas. Some areas are, you know, more dynamic than others, depending on the, you know, the geography, what companies are located in those geographies. But I mean, as I think everyone knows, there's the problem is there's all these people who say they're an X or a Y or a Z, and a lot of people have certifications and really don't have any practical experience. And we really try to hone in on the practical experience with the people that we're talking to, specifically and most importantly in the functional roles, you know, product owners and scrum masters and business analysts. We find that that's you know, obviously the most important roles, in my opinion, to have that really strong practical experience. Developers, obviously, you know, the technical skills are very important. We find that it's also really important that a lot of people tell us, you know, if we're a mature agile shop, we can kind of coach developers along and get them up to speed. But we really want to make sure, for instance, that, you know, that they know how to estimate, and, you know, having that skill set as a minimum is important for a lot of dev managers and directors that we talk to.
Hmm. It's interesting. I think I've seen both sides of that. I think I've worked with experienced agile developers in the past, and I've worked with complete newbies. I might just be getting old and surly, but I prefer to have developers with some degree of agile experience. It's obviously a lower barrier to entry, but yeah, that's cool that at least there's an awareness to that. Estimation is always a hot topic. We probably have to do an estimation show at some point just to talk about the different lines of thought there. But Steve, Rory, what about you guys? What do you guys see in your roles that you're being approached for in your staffing efforts?
I'd say that in terms of the area that I focus on most of myself, it's primarily within the technology division themselves, so more engineers. The demand for people that actually understand pragmatic, agile, that right tool for the job, that's the mentality that everyone's looking for. The problem is that you've got 10 places for every candidate, so it's becoming a much more candidate-driven market. The demand in terms of jobs, we've never seen anything like it in terms of what we've got coming through, but it's more about understanding the problem the client's got, because some people may have the capacity to upskill someone. And what we find is that it's understanding what degrees of flexibility they have within what they're trying to achieve. If they can actually say, hold on, well, we've got someone who may have been in the wrong environment, you know, perhaps worked at a bank, wants to break into the agile space in a true fashion. And it's a case of, okay, well, what steps have you taken to actually go about learning what you should be doing? Have you practiced on your own? Can you come in and take advantage of the platform that's going to be put in front of you? And I think that that's the one thing that we really have to hone in on when it is such a candidate short market.
Mm. I think, you know, that's actually a really interesting point. The fact that it is a seller's market, a buyer's market right now for practitioner, it almost creates the leaky bucket for guys like Jim who are trying to go out there and train companies and recruiters to build these meaningful roles. But if they can't get meaningful people, it's really difficult, right? I'm curious, Jim, are you seeing that because of the number of the amount of need versus the amount of supply? Are you fighting almost not a losing battle, because that just seems like you're a negative, but do you see that as a self-fulfilling prophecy that these bad jobs are going to keep producing themselves because there's not enough qualified people to fill them?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, right, these roles wouldn't exist if people weren't filling the roles. That you know, that's the bottom line. If we had a wand, we'd say that, hey, people in the agile community don't take on these roles. But we also know that the inside joke is MDD, mortgage-driven development. And sometimes our financial responsibilities have to make us pragmatic. But for me, I can't really comment too much because obviously I'm not on the recruiting side. What I would say, though, is that there definitely are people who will still fill those roles. And it does feel like a little bit what we're doing is just a drop in the ocean, because there's so much to fix. It's like trying to eat an elephant. But then what we do say to ourselves is, fundamentally, even the agile, you know, the whole agile kind of uprising, little shout there, what you've got. But it started when people were talking about, hey, can we create working stuff over documentation? Can we respond to change over following a plan? You know, can we collaborate over yada, yada, yada? And there were some cynics out there who also said, look, you're never going to work that way. It never works that way. And we're far from beyond transforming the world of work. But I think the second that we raise awareness and we show an appetite and we're willing to help between the two communities, it's a start. So ambitious, yes, but maybe naively optimistic still.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think what's interesting too, I mean, my background or my current gig, at least, I'm a manager of development. So I randomly have to fill roles, and sometimes they're more of a Scrum Master type role. Sometimes they're more of a core development role. Sometimes I'm doing some UX work, and I work for a relatively large international company, and trying to get that mindset of, hey, we are no longer in the position of power by having the job opening. We're actually at the mercy of the qualified candidate. So when we find one, we need to move faster than we're used to moving. And that is a huge, from an internal person, an internal practitioner, that mind shift is significant. And it almost feels like you're a very small person pushing a very large boulder at times. I'm curious if you guys, when you're dealing with larger clients, are you seeing similar things where paradigm shift happened quicker than the company was aware of, and how are they responding to it?
So for us, it's we're just trying to get closer to the clients. It's more of a, like an education piece around, you know, you're absolutely right. We, you know, they are no longer in the position to say yes or no to the candidate. So we have to let them, make them be aware that there's an element of, you know, moving quickly, adapting process, putting in an extra, you know, half an hour's worth of sell. So yeah, it's just more about, it's that, you know, we're kind of getting closer to our clients to ensure that they're fully just aware.
And it's just so we can also help the candidate go on the journey from the first call, rather than just sounding like, you know, as Jem said, there's plenty of recruiters out there that will say the buzzwords, not really understand it, and actually talk to them about what the challenges are in the projects these guys are having, you know, where they're going to gain something from, you know, taking on an opportunity like this. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, a software engineer's next job choice isn't their career move for life. As Jem said, you know, people are looking at progression, and it's what do they get out of it too? And, you know, we have to be quite candid with our clients and tell them exactly, you know, this is the situation. You know, you're in a contract-driven market sometimes, and the fact is you're going to upskill this guy, you're going to get 2-3 years out of him at best, and then he's going to disappear. But at the same time, if you don't do that, you can have someone who's half as good and never reach the quality that you need. So it's just, like Roy said, it's education, I think, is the biggest piece of it.
Oh, cool. So I got a question. It's something that Jem touched on earlier. I think anybody that's been in an Agile team of any degree of maturity for longer than 6 months now calls himself an Agile coach. To you guys, when you go out, if you don't mind, I'm going to start with Jem just because he comes from the practitioner space. When you go and you coach recruiters and recruiting firms on how to better write job specs, how do you define with them the term Agile coach, the role of an Agile coach?
This is a really contentious area. But first thing I'd say is worth offering this. I don't know if this is just like a European thing or a London thing, but a solid Scrum Master, for example, okay, wears many hats, right? So it could be a mentor, he could be a team player, he could be a coach. So, you know, like the Scrum Master responsibilities are the team, business, and the organization. But in London, what I've seen, most Scrum Master roles only focus on the first responsibility, which is, hey, we're just hiring you to look after the team. Don't look beyond this. I'm being a little bit simplistic on purpose. This is your remit. But what I'm getting at is that a good Scrum Master can do what an Agile coach does as well. Now, when I answer your question, I'm giving that background for this reason. When some of the guys I've been training and they're saying, oh, we've got a client and they want a Scrum Master / delivery lead / product owner, all things to all men. When I've spoken with a client with them at the same time, what comes out of it is they're looking for someone from a consultative purpose. You see what I mean? They want someone who understands not just a Scrum framework, but understands Agile from a principle and value basis. In that case, I would then suggest, say, maybe they are looking for more of an Agile consultant or an Agile coach, because they're looking for someone who's agnostic to the solution that's going to be used. So when you hire somebody who's a Scrum Master and they may not be that experienced, naturally, they may want to offer Scrum as the tool of choice because that's what they've been around. But a seasoned Scrum Master may go in and say, I may be a Scrum Master, but actually this team may benefit more from Kanban. or actually, they don't need Scrum or Kanban. We can look at XP principle. Do you see what I mean? So
no, I'm so happy that's where you went, because when you started, I thought I was going to have to sit here and start getting loud, but Scrum does not equal Agile. So therefore, a Scrum Master doesn't equal an Agile coach. They may be a great Scrum coach, right? They might really understand that framework. They may know the nuts, the bolts. They may know the anti-patterns of Scrum. That does not mean they understand Lean. That does not mean they understand Kanban really, really well, fundamentally well. They may not also understand the XP practices really, really well. For me, I'm looking for an Agile coach to have done all or most of those things and failed and succeeded in all of those things. Because if I have a coach that says they've only been good, then they've never actually done it. That's just my spin on it.
I guess let's quickly respond to that. You know, like I'm just talking from my experience. A good solid seasoned Scrum Master understands Lean, the Toyota production system. They understand the whole origin of it, because you know Kanban and Scrum, they're like siblings. They've got so many similarities. They both want to achieve the same thing. But I think what it really is, the problem is that we've had a new breed of Scrum Masters. And I have to admit, I was like this when I was new. And it becomes dogmatic. It becomes overzealous. It becomes, I'm going to try and eat this soup with a fork. Mm. I don't care that a spoon's better, but I have to use the fork because that's all I've ever used. But this is, I think, a case of maturity and also challenging the community to be a bit more open-minded. Do you see what I mean? So,
yeah, no, I think we're actually saying the same thing. My point is, for every one good Scrum Master, the person you defined as the good Scrum Master, there's probably 10 that aren't good. And I'm speaking more to those masses. I mean, because of the certification, which I'm sure we're going to get into at some point here, you spend $1,000, £1,000, you get 2 days off, and you go get yourself a certification, all of a sudden you're an expert. That's not how it works. And you have these guys running around waving a piece of paper, these guys and girls waving a piece of paper thinking they're coaches. That's kind of where I get my frustration from. Okay. I want to open it up to Scott. I mean, what are you guys doing when you talk to companies about Agile coaching?
Well, when we talk to companies about it, we want to understand, you know, really what are they looking for? They're looking for someone like a technical coach. Sometimes they need someone with a technical background because they're going to be working with a lot of engineers, and you know, they want them to have some of that skill set. Or is it more of a, you know, functional type person? Is it team level? Is it program level? Is it enterprise level? And, you know, to piggyback on something that Jem said, that agnostic approach is very important to the customers that we talk to, because they don't want someone to come in and be, you know, the Scrum police or the, you know, Kanban police or the fill in the blank police and say, this is how you do it, this is what works. You know, you need people who can come in and evaluate and maybe, you know, bounce things off people, say, this is what I did at this firm and this really worked, why don't we try this? As opposed to saying, this is what the Scrum guide says, this is what you have to do. And so when we're talking to people on the candidate side, it's really more of a conversation. We're not peppering them. We're asking them to tell us what it means, kind of like this conversation, and listen to them talk about their experiences and see if they sound like someone who can be flexible and maybe, you know, form some new ideas around the way a company's going, and maybe lead them down a path if they need to, but also be able to step back and say, okay, you know, that's working. Maybe that's not how I would have done it, but it's working. So let's keep focusing on that, versus, like you said, someone who's just going to say, well, you know, you're supposed to do this, your team's supposed to be this size, or, you know, fill in the blank. It's really back to that practical experience and being able to bring those practical experiences from other customers to, you know, to your current position. And in most cases, I say like your current position, because we're dealing with a lot of consultants when we're talking about coaching. Some companies obviously have internal Agile coaches, but from the most part, we're talking about consultants.
Yeah. And I guess that kind of leads to my next question. When you guys, without giving away any trade secrets, obviously, but how do you guys go about finding these guys? I mean, I'm thinking about the listener on podcast right now that is looking for that next role. How do you guys tend to source them? How do you tend to find them? Is it LinkedIn? Is it Twitter? Is it something different? I guess I'll start with Steve and Rory.
I think from our side, if you're not utilizing every tool at your disposal, then you're not doing what you should be doing. Look, obviously LinkedIn's a very good resource, but it's the trodden path that everyone goes down. You know, meetups and the social side of the communities that we're dealing with, you know, we help arrange a number. We've always sort of been active within the community, and I mean, obviously you were speaking at one. So that tends to be where we try and build a lot of sort of network. For me, recommendations are always the first point of call. Find someone who's doing that job that does it very well, and who would they recommend? Pull the string. Rory, yourself?
I agree with Steve. It's all in the above. In general, we found you know, agile coaching is quite often a slightly more kind of contract driven. You know, you're coming on board or coming in to influence change for the better within a company. So it's quite often like a, you know, could be a transformation project or anything. So it's quite often, it's a network, and it's just being in that network, the community network that we find. Is where we're getting the guys from.
Scott, anything different from you? I mean,
absolutely. You know, LinkedIn's great. Networking. You know, I go to conferences just to meet people. I encourage my recruiters to go to meetups. There's, you know, lots of different meetups all over the area, all over the country. DevOps is, you know, the new hot button topic, you know, not necessarily new, but everyone's really getting on board with that. So I've been encouraging, you know, my team to get out to DevOps meetups, interact with those people. You know, you're not going to build relationships with emails. So, you know, talking to people face to face is critical, and every opportunity that we have to do so, we take advantage of it.
So how about this? I mean, I know that the Scrum Alliance has their community site. I believe they actually have a job board as well. Agile Alliance, I think, has something similar. Do recruiters tend to go to those types of sites, or the types of candidates you're looking or source from the places that we're going?
Sometimes, yes. Like, we're members of the Scrum Alliance and Agile Alliance, so we have access to their database of people that have been certified. So you can kind of start there. But as we've discussed, that's just kind of scratching the surface. It is sometimes a place to go where you might not be thinking of.
A few times we mentioned in there the difference between a contractor and a full-timer is how I refer to them. But a full-time employee, does that change the lens that the recruiter has if they know that they're looking to fill a full-time placement versus a contractor or contract to hire type placement? Do you look for different attributes in a candidate? If you're talking about a contract gig, is it more you look for somebody that's the serial contractor versus somebody that's been a full-timer and trying to flip them into a contractor? How do you guys approach those types of things? Scott, you want to get started?
Yeah, sure. We do look at it differently. You know, if someone like yourself is looking for a full-time individual, then we're not going to look at someone who's been on, you know, 6 to 12 month contracts their entire career, because the likelihood is that they're not going to stick around unless there's some sort of, you know, life event that they've decided, you know what, I don't want to travel anymore, or I have a family, or whatever.
My team's done it, man. We've taken the serial contractor, made them full-time believers based on the culture we got.
Absolutely. On the flip side, you know, contract to hire is great for both the consultant and the employer, because you can try before you buy. And from our perspective, that's a good way to lure a serial full-timer into a contract type role, because there's the opportunity for full-time. They can try out the company. Everyone can get a feel for them, you know, if it's going to work, and then decide if they want to stay. And again, for us, the functional and technical piece makes a difference as well. You know, when we're looking at those functional roles, I mean, we almost always find the better people that are in some sort of full-time role. Now, it might be a full-time consultant type role where they've got a benefits package versus just an hourly rate. But we tend to find that those people, for whatever reason, I don't know the secret sauce, but those individuals on the functional side that are coming from that more full-time stable environment typically have some better experiences to draw on because they've stuck around for a little while and been able to see things that work and don't work. And on the development side, you know, again, this is just our experience, but, you know, on the developer side, you know, the contractors are usually the better developers, people that go and, like, I think Steve or Rory said, you know, 2 or 3 years tops, and then they're moving on to something else and learning some new skills and not getting stale.
Yeah. Steve, Rory, do you guys have any different feeling? I mean, on the conversation about contractor versus full-time?
I mean, from what I experience on the contract versus perm, with perm, there's obviously a greater onus on making sure the culture fit and long-term is better, because like if it is, there's going to be some investment and some, well, it's just a longer gig, right? So obviously they need to be more aligned to the DNA of that company. However, with a contractor, sometimes it can be a case of what is the problem you're trying to resolve? And you know what, going after someone who's done that as bread and butter, you know, day in, day out over the last number of years in multiple environments, they've seen how it happens. Look, you know, that's, it's superb when you do get someone with contract or, you know, Scott Wright said, a consultant is the ideal because they've been into multiple projects, they've seen different environments, they've seen good, they've seen bad, they know what it looks like, and they understand the world they operate in. The problem you have is, though, if you're hiring a contractor into perm, you know, the resistance I've always had is that they're going to disappear. You know, as soon as a better offer comes along, yeah, they're gone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fees that, you know, you're paying on these guys, realistically, you want to make sure that guy's going to be staying around. It's an investment. So that's what I would say. The difficulty with contractors, unless, like you said, Scott, you know, unless there's a life-changing situation, you know, whether it's a case that they're trying to get a mortgage, they, you know, they've got kids going to school, they need that flexibility, the benefits package, healthcare, all these things can factor into the decision. But generally speaking, managers are very reluctant to take a contractor, particularly on the technical side, but on the functional side, they're more inclined to consider contractors because of the impact they've had.
Yep. No, I mean, from the hiring manager's perspective, there is that apprehension because I call it the mercenary mentality. They're out there to make their money. They're out there to solve their problem. And they're also the contractors I'm speaking about here. They're typically experienced junkies, right? Even if it's not more money, if it's some cool new language or it's some cool new dynamic within the team that they get to work on, they may jump just at that opportunity. Developers are an interesting group. So I guess, Jim, I want to ask you this question and see if the conversation picks up. But when, say you were going to be interviewing for a position, either as a coach, roll back a couple of years and you're going in as a scrum master, what do you feel the most effective interview process would be for to highlight not just your skills but the marriage between you as a person and the company that you're interviewing with? Forget what you've been through, but like what would that ideal journey be for you to exemplify the Agile principles?
This is a good question. So you could take the essence of how a company I worked with before would hire an SA developer. Instead of it being just one conversation, you may have a developer stand aside the whole day. Join the daily rituals, as you may see it. Let them pair program with the other developers. See how their interactions are. I think often the challenge is that just being as good as your day, or you know, being as good as on the day, like in the exam situation, doesn't allow you to really get a gauge of what you're going to be dealing with. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, for me, the ideal process, I mean, I've been contracting for almost the last decade. What do I know? I mean, I've had a lot of baptism through fire, mate, to be honest with you. But more than anything, if I'm going for a coaching role, what I like to know is, what I'm dealing with. In other words, people like the idea of Agile, okay? They like the idea of wanting to do it. But doing it is very different to the idea. And so what I want to understand is, what's their disruption budget? What is their appetite for change? So then that way, you know, I'm fully aligned on how far we need to go. Some people want to focus on progress, the process, as opposed to trying to challenge values and culture. I get that, because in a, you know, 5,000 or 8,000 man corporation, you might not be able to change culture. I get that. So let me know what it is that you want to deal with. What is your appetite? And I'll tell you if it fits within my skill set, as well as my integrity. Mm. And off of the weight of that too, I'll go from there.
Mm. I'll tell you, I mean, Scott or Steve, either one of you guys jump in here, but do you see the interview process or the, you know, just the interview process being different for Agile roles, or is it relatively the same as traditional roles?
I'd say, generally speaking, we're noticing people streamlining much more efficiently and moving away from one-on-one to more panel-based interviews. You see a lot of pairing exercises within the technical interviews starting up, but it's not necessarily about the actual output, but more the approach and seeing how the mind ticks and how they are to work and interact with. And then beyond that, it tends to become much more orientated around a whiteboard, communicating what you know from, you know, getting it out from what's in your head, out your mouth, and people actually understanding it exactly as you meant it. So if they're able to concisely understand the world they operate in, again, that's the biggest thing we look for. After that, it then becomes, you know, culture, and this could be 45 minute sessions. And then that culture also becomes a two-way process where they start selling their company and what, you know, their values and why, you know, why this person should be really, you know, chomping at the bit to work for them.
Mm. Yeah, it's become far more interactive. So it's less about, you know, question and answer. It's a conversation. That's something that, you know, people have really, really moved towards, and we encourage our companies to move towards as well, because, you know, candidates are interviewing the companies as well.
Right. Agreed. And then Scott, do you have anything additional?
Well, Steve and Rory covered it pretty well. It's very interactive. There's definitely, we see a lot of coding exercises. Companies are a little more open to video interviews now, which is a necessity, because, you know, in the Philadelphia area, for instance, there's only so many people, you know, and there's a saturation point. You know, you've got huge companies like Comcast, Elsevier, Capital One, all trying to hire the same people. So you have to go outside of the general area. And 4 years ago, some companies were still hesitant about that, especially, you know, Agile shops are like, oh, you know, we got to see people face to face, and we want them to be here, and it just isn't practical. If you really want to see the best people out there, and not just who's available in your area, you need to think a little bit differently. You know, I think we also see, from a development standpoint, again, the development skills are important, but then they're kind of digging in to see how much Agile experience they really have, because you'll see every Java developer is like participated in standups and participated in this. And then you start asking them, okay, well, how long were your iterations? And, you know, what's your role in the grooming process? And you start asking some other questions and they're like, what? Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of dig through that they haven't really worked in an Agile environment. They've worked in Wagile or, you know, Scrum Fall or whatever you want to call it.
Just start asking them how often their code, how quickly their code goes to production. That'll usually ferret it out. Well, yeah,
absolutely. And when you see someone that says that they, you know, put code into production twice a year, then, you know, they're probably not working in an Agile shop.
Yeah. I mean, granted, that doesn't mean, if you're only putting code into production twice a year, it doesn't necessarily not mean you're working in an Agile shop. There may be some other constraints you're dealing with, maybe regulated industry, but that's usually a pretty quick tell. I mean, if you're committing code to source control once every 3 weeks, then boy, oh boy, we have some conversations to be had. And I just want to point out how disappointed I am that at least two or three of you said that you see pair programming happening in interviews. I thought that was my thing. I thought I was the only one doing that, but damn it all, I'm not the unicorn I thought I was. For those that are looking to enter the Agile space, if it's a traditional waterfall BA that wants to get out of the heavy documentation, or if it's a developer that's looking to get into onto an Agile team, or just say it's somebody that's interested in being a product owner or a Scrum Master, what advice would you give those people to get the chops, to get the experience, to enter the workforce and to be part of the mindset shift?
I'm going to take that one, right? I mean, from a technical perspective, there's so much you can do. I think the fact of the matter is the barriers to entry of most industries are changing. You're only a victim of your own circumstance if you allow it to be. With all the tools that are available online, the courses, even through Coursera, but obviously it doesn't teach you everything you're going to need to know. But what it can do is it can give you a foundation and give you something to go and push on from, do your own research so that, you know what, you can put your own personal projects on your CV. You know, for me, if a developer's not got a GitHub, then that's the first red flag. You know, obviously, or, you know, equivalent Stack Overflow, Bitbucket or whatever. But ultimately, they need to be someone that's trying to push themselves on beyond what their day job is. If it's a 9-to-5 for them, then they're probably not going to survive in the Agile world. It has to be about more than just being the job. You have to see the value.
Cool. Scott, what about you, man? What are your thoughts on that person that's looking to do the career jump? Scott's on mute. Perfect.
Sorry. So this is going to go against what I said previously, but for someone that has absolutely no experience, a certification might be a good way to get started because at least you're getting some foundation. That's not going to get you a gig though. I would then, add the caveat that the same thing that I say to my recruiters, go to networking events, go to places where people in this community hang out. Because if you've got the right mindset and you've got the right personality, which I know is important to people like yourself, then you're going to meet someone like you that says, hey, maybe I can give this person a shot. Maybe they've got what I think is the right stuff from a personality standpoint and they can learn the other stuff. Because as we all know, it's a very, cultural type driven environment and you got to have the right mindset. And you can have all the certifications in the world, but if you're, stuck in your ways and you're not open to adapting, you're never going to be successful in any type of Agile environment. So I would say, get out there and meet people that are doing it and, just try to network.
Yeah. Jim, anything additional you'd add?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've trained up a lot of people who don't come from any kind of technical background, nothing to do with software, into Scrum Masters. And the advice is simple. It's like it's like a diet. You need to read a lot, but not just read, but try and apply some of the ideas of Agile or Scrum, whatever it is. So whether it's evidence-based management, visualization of your work, breaking things down to smaller pieces to manage uncertainty, whatever it is, try and actually apply that learning to whatever situation you're in. Second to that, as you say, meetups, and really try and get as much work experience as you can. You don't want to become a classroom professor where it's just theory, but just as much application of information to turn it into knowledge as possible. That's definitely the premise of my coaching with people, where read, yes, apply it, and also try and watch somebody in action.
The only thing I think I would add just on my own is I have a professional mentor. I think there is huge value in going out to these meetups and going to some of the regional conferences. And as you hear people speak or as you interact with these people, if there's somebody that really resonates with you, that has a career history of something that you want to experience for yourself, identify with that person, ask that person for a mentor relationship and establish that, because that person will not only help you make the right steps, they'll help you identify the any patterns and the missteps that you could make. I can't speak highly enough of how my mentor has helped me significantly in my career. So throw that one out there for consideration. And then I lied. I have one final question, because we talked about certifications a few different times here. It comes up in nearly every conversation I have with different folks. I mean, my feelings on certification is you get out of it what you put into it. If your idea is to walk away with a piece of paper, you will damn sure get a piece of paper. But if you're going in to learn from the experience, if you're going in to build a cohort experience, you can do that. My question to you guys, when you're going to fill roles, Scrum Master, a product owner, those types where the certs are very strong, or a safe practitioner, where the certs are really, really strong, are they an entry ticket? Do you need that certification to be considered for the job?
No. Simply, no. It's more about kind of the application of how they've, you know, what have they done during work, how they applied certain techniques, or how they try to influence change or improve or learn, and that kind of thing. We never rule people out based on like lack of certification. It's all based on their experience.
Cool. And Scott, what about the US market? Is it a similar story?
Yes and no. From a candidate side, I would agree with Rory. We don't care if they have a certification, but from the customer side, some of them do. A new company that's just transitioning into Agile is going to be, you know, typically looking for and asking for people with certifications and certifying their own employees because they don't really know any better. They have no other place to start. More mature organizations tend to have it be optional. It's a nice to have, but again, the practical experience is what gets you in the door.
It makes companies feel very safe, the whole certification thing. So, you know, part of a lot of what we do is, I mentioned it earlier on, you know, we try to partner with companies and ensure that they're aware that, you know, there are other ways or even better ways to attract people, and they could be even better than someone who's been certified times a million, you know, that kind of stuff. So yeah it's just explaining that to some clients who may not be aware of the MOS.
So if their LinkedIn name wraps two lines, that doesn't necessarily guarantee them a job?
No, sadly.
All right. I want to thank you guys. I'm going to start with Steve and Rory. If people want to get in touch with you, if they want to contact you, what's the best way? Is it LinkedIn, Twitter, email, some other?
All the above, to be honest. And we've actually got another Agile Practitioners event on the 12th, which, as Scott highlighted earlier, DevOps is the theme, as it's very current. So we've got three speakers there from Microsoft, Space 8 Gaming, and LMAX. If anyone wants to come down, we'll be there as well to meet us in person.
Where's that at?
That is at, wait one second.
It's obviously in London, so.
It's at Skills Matter, this one.
Okay. And they can find out more details.
It's up for open on our website.
And that's arrowsgroup.com?
It is, yeah.
All right, cool.
That's just going live, I believe.
Yeah.
Cool. I'll make sure I get a link into the show notes as well. Scott, if people are looking to get in touch with you or your team, what's the best means?
Yeah, LinkedIn. Look for Yo, Y-O-H, and scott.keller@yo.com.
Cool, man. Jim, you probably have a few things going on right now. You're always an international man of mystery. People are looking to get a hold of you. Where are you going to be? How should they reach out to you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm all over LinkedIn. Sometimes I get obsessed with it, to be honest. But yeah, I'm not hard to find. We're doing a talk in Portugal. I mean, I'm in Porto tomorrow. I'll be talking about Agile recruits going to the national Scrum gathering there, and hopefully in San Diego as well in April. So yeah, LinkedIn, Twitter, I'm all over it.
Cool. Well, again, this is another episode from the Agile Uprising. This and all of our episodes are shared on agileuprising.com. Give us a follow on @AgileUprising. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Guys.
Bye.